And we have a quorum. We have Rick Dodge, Gabe Noodle, Dennis Sullivan. Now we have Mike here. That's our roll call. Approval of the minutes of the previous meeting. I just asked if anyone had a chance to go through those. We have two. We have a Monday, April 2nd, and then we had a walkthrough of a county park on Sunday, April 15th. If you've had a chance to look through those, if you have any questions, you may have questions, or otherwise we can just have a motion.
Like a motion to approve
the two?
The two. Or you want to do it separate?
No, that's fine. Made by Supervisor Noodle. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Moved and seconded to approve the minutes of the previous meetings. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
I don't know. Do you think governors? We'll let you vote tonight.
Aye.
Okay. Because you actually were at the one meeting. Before I move on, I'm going to tell you what that second meeting was about. You gentlemen will be getting a booklet on that Katy Park, and that's where the meeting was held. We were going over a report and a study that we had done for the future of that property. And one of the options that we had, and what we've been doing here as a facilities committee, was to study all the options. And one of the big things there was A or B, which was on the water level of the lake. So we met with local property owners that day. That was that Sunday meeting to see how we would affect their aquifer on their ponds and things. And what we came up with as a committee that day was we wanted to leave the water level as it is at this point. So what we're going to do starting next meeting again is go back into that. We'll put that on the agenda. And we'll have our new committee members, we'll meet out there. We'll take a look and explain that to you. And then we're going to go. It's going to be recommendations from this committee to the county board on how we proceed. It's going to be... Who knows, 10-year process, 15-year process, but right now that park opened full-time on this past Saturday for hiking and fishing. There's a whole lot more to that plan, as you probably all read going through it. The park, if we get into my comments, the park did open this weekend. I was out there 3 or 4 times talking to people. Everyone was very pleased that it was there. And it was a rainy, kind of a junk weekend. But there was a lot of fishermen don't care, you know, and they were out there. And there was people hiking, and things were going very well. Everyone was, again, very pleased that we're out there. Any committee members have any comments this evening? Youth and Governance?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
All right, I guess these are my last remarks.
This is it.
Last thing, gotta make it memorable. First one is, I welcome you aboard this committee. It's a fun committee. Next month, there will be 2 new youth faces on this committee. I'll probably come to this one to kind of just orientate them with the committee. But it'll be kind of nice seeing 2 new fresh faces. And so a couple of tips I would recommend, make sure you connect with them. They're very nervous, so if you go out of your way to welcome them personally, I think it makes their service a lot better. Just talk to them on a regular basis when they're at the meetings. Make sure you get their feedback. Just make them feel welcome and make them feel part of this committee. The second one, I would encourage you all to go to the Youth and Governance Orientation, the ceremony. I think it's 7 o'clock on May 15th, which is next Tuesday. That's when my term officially ends and the new group gets their term started. So I would encourage you to go there, get a look at what's coming in this year. And ultimately, I'm glad that you all support the Youth and Governance Program, and I'm sure I'll be around. We'll see you in the future, too. So, thank you.
Thank you, Dustin. And for our new committee members, the Youth and Governance will have, I don't know, now that we're shrunk down, will we have two?
I think so. Yeah.
They are advisory votes, but they certainly take part in all the discussion and any debate that they want to do. And Dustin, here we've been very lucky to have Dustin Bethard to participate because he does both, and a lot of them don't. You know, I've been on committees where, as Dustin said, they're a little bit inhibited, but we've gotten a lot of good comments, and it's a wonderful program. So, again, Dustin, I know I said that our last meeting, I didn't know we'd see it tonight, but we're very thankful that you were here and appreciated everything that you did. Citizens' comments would be next. Any citizen, Ray?
Mr. Chairman, just so we could get familiar, could we do a kind of a quick, because I've met, obviously, Supervisor Nuno before when he was on.
Yeah, we should. You know, I had it written down. I didn't do it. So we should probably introduce ourselves. Starting with you, Ray, and then we'll go around this way.
Okay, I'm Ray Arbett, the Public Works Director for the county.
John Rudy, the General Manager of Parks.
Dan Dreyer, the General Manager of the Division of Golf.
Vicki Gallage, the DPW Assistant to the Director.
I'm Mike Skolitsky, District 19 Supervisor.
Mike Dodge, District 5 Supervisor.
Dennis Elverman, District 23 Supervisor.
Gabe Brother, District 12 Supervisor.
Gary. Well, I'm Dustin Beth, outgoing Youth and Governance Member.
Gary Sipsma, I'm the Director of the Division of Highways.
Ron Henney, Maintenance Manager.
I'm Bernie Vash, Corporation Counsel for the County.
There we go. Any citizens' comments? Citizens' comments are closed. Old business parks, none. New business. Resolution to grant a sewer line easement for access and maintenance. This is out next to the Kemper Center.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll start over here. Bernie put a nice map up there, kind of showing the red outline area that the easement's going to affect. I guess maybe Bernie probably knows this a little better, that the easements for the maintenance of the city's storm sewer outfall that kind of comes out right in that little cove right there. Yes, thank you.
Just and, don't point at the letters if you want to vowel or not. Yeah.
Anyways, it appears that somehow along the line we had the last kind of agreement we had with the city was a letter of agreement from 2001. And so the city came and proposed to actually get a real easement with us, and in exchange for that easement, to get maintenance, you know, be able to have maintenance access to their storm outfall. The portion that's in yellow is right now, it's just a narrow, maybe 8 foot wide old driveway that's broken up. There used to be a carriage house back there that was associated with the mansion Anderson. It was sort of a garage thing with, I think, probably at one time the person that took care of the horses and stuff like that. But the building fell in disrepair probably around 2006 or 2007, and it was removed. So the city's always used that driveway to access that structure, but it's now so busted up. And
this driveway?
The yellow.
The yellow.
Oh, the yellow. That's the driveway. Okay.
Yep. So what they're proposing now is they're going to put in a new apron on the street, a new sidewalk in that section, widen the road to widen that driveway to 12 foot wide, and put a substantial base under it, like any other road. Gary Sipsma from Highways okayed their specifications, so they're building a decent road to handle their dump trucks and their loader when they go in there. And then not only that, so that's about 500 foot, I believe, of roadway they're going to pave, and then they're doing a little turnaround down in that block so they can turn dump trucks and stuff around in there where there's nothing there now, it's just mud and gravel. And then right where that ends, they're going to gate it.
Are they going to extend down into here, just where it ends, yellow ends?
I think they're just going to go to the yellow,
okay,
from what I understand. And then they're going to gate it. Because if you come around there with a bicycle right now and you miss the curb, you'd go right up on top of that cement structure and straight off for a 4 or 5 foot jump. So they're going to gate that so that doesn't happen. And then when you go back up, if you look on your map that was attached in your packet to the easement, you can see there's a portion of a bike trail coming off of it that swings east and then goes north. And they also propose to install that portion of the bike trail for us as part of the project. So it'd be the apron, the sidewalk, the road, the gates, the bike trail, and the associated signing that will go along with that bike trail. I don't know, so you folks, I know one of the main things that they need to get in there to do is the waves wash up sand and debris right up in front of that outfall. So they have to get right down in there with a loader to clean that out. And I know they do it possibly a couple, three times a year. So
it's actually dredged right in this area here.
Yeah, they just kind of get right in there with like a backhoe,
yeah,
with a loader bucket on and just dig it out. And that's about all I have on it.
That's a good question. What part of that cost is the county's?
None.
Okay.
So in exchange for the easement, that's basically and it's actually the water utility that's, yeah, going to be doing the work, doing the paving to the specs that Gary put together.
The stormwater outflow is so low that it's not that much higher than the lake level. And that's why when there's any storms and whatnot, the sand and the gravel washes back towards the openings. It's not very much higher than that. There is some distance between it. I don't know how much you'd say, maybe 100 feet, maybe 75 feet. But when the lake gets rolling, it splashes into there. And then they have to come and make sure it's open.
Do they dig a recess down in here so that it's basically like a collection basin? Is that the intent of what they're...
I don't think so.
No.
I think so it's just pretty much
level
flat.
And
yeah.
That's why it keeps building back up. And I see a proposed bike path near. What's the story with that? Is that?
Oh, okay.
I know it's kind of outside, yeah, of the area, but it does run in here.
Yeah, they're going to do the portion of it over up to that first, looks like a lot line.
I know.
Yeah, right there. They agreed to run it that far for us. And then that bike path here in the near future will continue all the way along the lake, all the way up and come out right to the sidewalk to the pier.
Up here or much, yeah, further north?
Well, we hope to go further north, but that we don't have that exactly laid out on a plan.
So for right now, they'll lay that in for
it's
us.
Just going to go there, yeah.
They're going to pave that, son?
They are, yes.
Yeah.
That'll all be paved through 10-foot wide.
Any other questions or discussion?
Is there a timetable when they're going to do that, or...?
Is there a timetable for the project? Have they committed to, like, once this gets passed through the hoops, have they said?
I think it was later this summer, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think they are pretty much ready to go as soon as they receive the approval.
Oh,
I think they're waiting for this easement.
Yes.
Any other questions or discussion?
Is this Anderson Arts Center? Is that county property? Is that city?
County.
Oh,
county.
Yep. And with that easement, will it restrict any use of this area at all in the future that anybody anticipates?
No.
Well, they said actually as far as some of the events like the jazz and a couple of other music things that they have down there, they thought that this would provide them a little bit better access for some of the equipment they've got to get into
which
that lawn
plays
area.
Out in this area, I'm assuming,
yeah,
something like that.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's a non-exclusive easement, meaning the public can ride their bikes on that section that's...
The yellow?
Down there, yeah.
Obviously up to the fence, and you don't, yeah, want it back there anyway.
So they'll probably take a left and go up the bike trail once the bike trail will go somewhere.
Then they'll hit the mud puddle right,
yeah,
there.
Anything else from anyone? If not, could we have a motion?
So moved.
Second. Moved by Supervisor Nudo, seconded by Supervisor Dodds. Any further discussion? Not all those in favor, say aye.
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 Use the governor?
Aye.
Motion carries. We're going to move on to Resolution to apply for a sewer SIP grant for acquisition of park property. Mr. Arvin is going to handle that. I'm going to explain to the supervisors what this actually is before we do that. If we are applying for a stewardship grant, we are not committing ourselves to the purchase of this property. We are simply applying, and in doing that, we are giving permission to our departments to apply for the grant. Discussion about actually purchasing this property would be quite a ways down the line, and it would come at the county board floor. There'd be a chance for debate, chance for voting, and things at that time. There's going to be three committees that are going to be looking at this, and they are going to be naturally going through the committee process. The grant process is something that we had to do a couple of weeks ago, according to their deadlines. So you're going to have plenty of time to look at this, plenty of time to discuss, debate. What we're doing here is giving our people permission to apply, and then to be able to accept if we decided to go ahead with purchase of this property. So with that, Mr. Arbert?
Yeah, that pretty much lays out the background on how we got to where we're at. I put together this overview document, and hopefully everybody got that in their packet or at least emailed to them. It's just an attempt to kind of lay out the key points of this whole thing, because there's quite a bit involved in it. It actually, about 6 weeks ago, came to our attention that the four land parcels that you see on the map that's attached in the packet, as well as the one up there, there's four land parcels totaling roughly 113 acres that are contiguous, that bump up against the west side of the park, came available, and we're in kind of a distressed situation. Talmer Bank has reclaimed those properties, or took those properties earlier this year, I believe it was, at an auction. We met with the bank representatives to learn more about the parcels and find out what their asking price was, and just see if there was any feasibility, if it made any sense to even consider purchasing these things, because it's not very often that this type of property comes available contiguous to a park like this. We contacted the DNR pretty much at the same time to see if any of that property would be eligible for stewardship funds. That original park, the KD Parklands, was purchased with a 50% match of stewardship funds back in 2001, is it, Chairman? Around 2001. So it's a similar kind of a thing. We talked to the DNR. They said that the two northernmost parcels, which are the two large ones that total about, one and two there, those total about 90-plus acres. Those two would be clean because they're pretty much just land. There's no real improvements on them. There is a substantial amount of broken up asphalt from when they had resurfaced, the state had resurfaced Highway 50 a few years back. That's where that material ended up. In addition to that, the third lot is the one that has the buildings that were part of a construction operation. The stewardship funding would not cover the purchase of the buildings per se, but the footprint of the land, or I should say the land without the footprint of the building, as well as, and I'll talk about it a little bit, the road that the potentially will go through there, Highway F's correction that would go through there. The stewardship grant wouldn't cover those pieces of the property, but basically those three chunks of straight up land, the stewardship funding could be used for. Stewardship funds don't come without strings. Once you purchase property, in fact, on that previous slide we had up there, Kemper was also acquired with stewardship funds back in the 1970s, and it's devoted to park and recreation, and those are the stipulations. This would be the same kind of a thing. That land would not be available for any kind of development. It would be park and recreation land, and that is the nature of the stewardship fund program, is to encourage communities to preserve certain amounts of green space. So those are the three main parcels. The fourth parcel, which we weren't, that was kind of out of left field when the bank brought that to our attention, that that was available. We had known about the first three. We weren't aware of that fourth parcel. And the fourth parcel, at first, we didn't think was of any real interest, except when I got back to the office and had a chance to talk with Gary, he indicated that the Highway F, which has been on sewer packs and our plans to correct, it's the only jog right now, if everybody's familiar with that area, it's the only stretch of Highway F that is not contiguous from Walworth County all the way to Paddock Lake. And it's been on the regional plans radar to get that corrected, to make that a contiguous kind of a road, so it can be a true alternative to Highway 50 in the event of an emergency or just an alternative route to get from Highway 50, Paddock Lake, all the way out to Walworth County. So the thing that was holding it up was that was those lands were all privately held and looked like it was probably going to be too expensive an adventure to get involved in. When that land with the pond on it there was slated for residential development, and unfortunately the folks that had that, with the real estate situation that's happened in the community over the past couple of years, they lost all that back to the bank. So the bank was able to put a price tag on that 10-plus acre parcel at a fraction of what it would have been worth probably in 2007. So when I learned that that was a kind of a key linchpin to being able to do the Highway F correction, we said, well, bank, what is, we asked bank what they wanted, and they said, well, if it's part of the whole package, they put a price of $110,000 on that 10-plus acres with the pond. And if you had a chance to look at the spreadsheet, which we can walk through, our best estimate for what it would cost to acquire the right-of-way that we'd need just for to put the road through there, it's about $80,000 between, and that actually is through that parcel as well as, if you see the proposed path for Highway F, it would go through that other parcel that has the buildings on it as well. Those two pieces. Actually, yeah, if you follow that all the way, yep, it goes and connects up with it to the west there. So that's kind of how the whole thing came together. We talked to the bank. We had put, Bernie had prepared an offer to purchase. In order to apply for the stewardship grant, you have to have a bona fide offer to purchase in play, which we prepared. All this happened in literally the last 3 weeks, so it's kind of a fast track kind of a thing that's come to our attention. Put that together. A stewardship grant, as Chairman Elverman indicated, had to be in by May 1st. We made that application with the discussion with the DNR that we don't have the support of the board yet. We've got to jump through committee hoops yet and get it to the full board. And they said, okay, that's fine. If you get the support, you just supply that documentation to us as well, and we'll consider the application. But we did have to get it in by May 1st, so we submitted that. The rest of the overview pretty much covers stuff I think that I've kind of already covered it. At this point, the resolution itself is just for the support of applying for the stewardship grant, but all this other information is part of the package, so we wanted to lay that all out so everybody knows kind of how it all came to be, and this is what we're looking to do. If we don't get the stewardship grant, which we would know at least a verbal indication from them they've kind of committed to us, probably in mid-June, early to mid-June, if we don't, I don't believe it would be our intent to pursue this any further without that grant money, but if we were to get the grant, we would want to pursue it, and we'd have to bring it back to the full board, actually through the committees again, and then back to the full board. So there'd have to be a full approval process at that point. At this point, we're just looking to get approval to go ahead and officially apply for the grant.
Question to the chair?
Yeah.
Would there be any financial liability to the county with all of that blacktop that's laying in there or with that lake?
Yeah, that was actually part of the exciting part of the discussion, because if we were fortunate enough to get the property, we would use a significant amount of that. From an environmental standpoint, the answer is no. There's been a phase one done on the property, and that poses no risks from that standpoint. But we would be able to use the bulk of that stuff, grind it up, to actually construct the Highway F that we need. So it would actually, from that standpoint, we could actually simultaneously kind of clean it up and use it for the construction of the highway.
If you look at the financial spreadsheet, mm-hmm. It looks by then, I think, Ray, you should also go into the future of what we're going to do to our other parks to explain some of that spread.
Yeah. And I just a note, too, I wanted to...
Maybe I could jump in.
Go ahead.
And you, we're going to start to get into the numbers next, but just talking about how this came to be, obviously this is a foreclosure situation, and the reason that we're able to get it is that the Powers Lake Construction Company had a tough time here with the severe recession that we went through, just like a lot of construction companies. And the prices we're getting, or the prices we're offered from the bank, are, as Ray said, a lot lower than they would have been in 2008. They are considered distressed properties, but we ask for a donation. You know, we start ground zero in negotiations, and they cannot do that. They're not, the bank, just like everybody else, I went through some tough times, and they are under an FDIC order to maintain a certain level of price for the properties that they do sell. So, well, they can sell it at a distress sale. They can't go below 75%. So they had an appraisal done. The appraisal was that these parcels were over, just for the three parcels and not the Pond Road parcel, they were over $1 million in value by their appraisers. The assessment was also over $1 million just for those three parcels. The foreclosure price that was approved by the judge in the foreclosure action was $854,000, and then the purchase price that they offered to us, it was $810,000, of which Ray's going to explain what benefits we'll get using this parcel and not using our revenues for other similar sources. But they can't sell us that fourth parcel at distressed sale prices unless it's part of the package. We can't come back later and get that fourth parcel. They would normally sell that for probably double that money or somewhere in that area because it's so close to the road. They feel that they could sell that for residential purposes later on. The other parcels they might have a harder time selling, but certainly to us it's a rare and unique opportunity to try to get a stewardship grant to help us purchase that. So that's what I wanted to add at that point.
So Ray, if you could, I think, highlight some of the expenditures that we were going to have at other parklands.
Yep.
And at the Katy Park, I think that'll explain it the best.
Gotcha. Yeah, the spreadsheet was put together. I'm just going to say something briefly. Jim Kupfer, who I know the chairman has met, he's usually at the meetings as well, but for the new members, he actually had a fairly serious illness last week that resulted in a surgery, came on suddenly, and he'll be out for about 6 weeks. He put the spreadsheet together. So you'll meet him hopefully in about 6 weeks when he's back.
Six arteries replaced, and I didn't even know there was six.
Right. That was, yes. He had this sextuplet bypass surgery, yeah. So the spreadsheet's pretty straightforward. Basically, at the top, it outlines the purchase prices, kind of the way they're allocated to do the deal. And if you see, there's $450,000 for those two upper portions. That number comes off of the appraisal that the bank had done a year ago. That third parcel is also off of an appraisal that was done a year ago. That's kind of the land value of the third parcel with the buildings on it, so it nets the buildings out of it. That $100,000 is kind of a plug figure, actually, that we just put in there because the actual appraisal for those buildings was substantially more than $100,000. But if you take those three items, the first two parcels and then that parcel three, that $450,000 and the $150,000 is $600,000. That's what the 50% down below for the stewardship grant, that's where the $300,000 comes in. It's for those, that $600,000 worth of land. And then, the shop and office and parcel four, that land, that was the price of $110,000 that the bank had given us. That totals at $810,000. Stewardship grant, we're anticipating $300,000. And our net purchase would be $510,000. But the things that we've got also to consider in the purchase price, given some of what's out there, the big mountain of asphalt. We've estimated, we actually went out and scoped out the size of that and estimate that it's worth a value of about $147,000 to us if it was crushed. In its current form, where it's just blocked, it's really not worth much.
Where is that in here?
That is up near, actually up near those two shallow ponds that are up at the very top. Yeah,
they're
kind of come just east of that, Mike, and it's right...
It's right here.
Yep, right there. That's where the mountains of stuff are. And they are, they're pretty substantial mountains.
So did they, this construction company, own all this land, or they were...
Correct. That was, all the property we're talking about was owned by Powers Light Construction. All of it was.
Then how did it get broken into all these sub-parcels, if they were the...
I'm not sure. I think it had to do if that was the family farm at one point. I'm not really sure of the history.
It was. It was farmland. They received the mining rights from the county years and years and years ago. So that back section where that asphalt is stored is part of a mined operation. It's a gravel pit. 2 years ago, when they were doing the Highway 50 construction, they received permission to haul all the asphalt that was taken out of Highway 50 into that position.
So they asked...
You didn't answer my question about the pollution on the lake.
You're going to have to go through the chair.
Yeah.
And then we'll go to questions. So okay. You do have a question?
Well, the first question I had was the asphalt pollution and the lake pollution. Any pollution in that lake that we may be aware of?
No. The phase one environmental that was done on all of this property came out with a clean bill of health. Okay. I went through both of them. Yeah, so it's all good from that standpoint.
It might look like a big piece of water. It's not a lake. It's a pond. It's a gravel pit pond.
Okay.
Right now.
You're talking about these two?
Yep. Yeah.
Certainly I can see the shell.
That's a different one.
That's a different piece of
water. That's a residential pond down low, down south.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And that one's okay also?
Yes.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there's no, to just get into the phase one a little bit, because I read through the entire thing, which is thrilling reading, but bottom line is there's no underground storage tanks, and there was none of what is commonly found on some of these kinds of smaller operations where guys would take the drain oil and put it out the back. Everything was given a clean bill of health on the phase one environmental. So it's good from that standpoint.
So we're up to the asphalt part.
Yeah, so the asphalt... Those numbers there basically is our best estimate of what it's going to cost us to crush that, or what it would cost anybody to crush that, and what it would be worth after it was crushed. Same with the concrete that is found there, cost to crush and the revenue generated. Big.
Don't mean to interrupt. When you're talking about revenue, that is if you sold it or the value that it would hold.
Market value, correct.
Yep.
Okay. Right now, in our capital improvement plan, we've had for the past couple years, we've got a plan to build a new maintenance facility at Fox River Park, kind of our West End Park maintenance facility. That building currently, although we haven't had it structurally evaluated, probably because I don't really want to know exactly what's going on. I've checked it out when I first came to the county 3 years ago. And there are some fairly significant structural issues with, it's got a precast ceiling or roof in it. And there are some cracks in, the building itself is it's actually in Fox River Park. So it's actually down F, a little further east of this park.
Not this one.
No.
This building is pretty good. The one you're talking
this
about.
This one you're talking about.
Yeah, the one I'm talking about that's in our capital improvement plan to replace for just over $500,000. That's the one that... We've got a need to do that, to address that building, and we've got $500,000 plugged into our capital improvement plan for, I think, the engineering's for next year, 2013, and then construction would be 2014, I think is how we've got it set up right now.
And is just equipment stored in that building? Or?
It's our repair shop.
Okay.
So it's actually where we go in, and pretty much all John's equipment on the west end of the county, that's the central place we repair it, because Brightondale doesn't have a facility. Our West End Parks...
Yep,
that's kind of our centralized repair facility.
So it's stored there. That's your repair facility right now.
Correct. Okay. There's some storage, but repair is the main deal. It's a garage. It's their garage.
Right.
So that's in our SIP right now. The KD Park. Now this is not. It says in the SIP, but it's really not in our SIP. It was in the master plan we did for the park. That if we do build out the park the way it could be built out, we would have to put some type of maintenance facility for the park itself. And that was estimated to be about $300,000 in our master plan. It's not in the SIP, though. I want to be clear that that's not, it's actually, should say, it not in the SIP. But it was part of the master plan. That was our best guess estimate for what that facility would cost.
And the idea would, that building there could double for both of these?
Correct. It would kill all of those. Yep, exactly.
Well, not only double, but what we had planned in the capital improvement plan for Fox River Park was not even half the size of this facility.
Okay.
Of the building.
So not only maintenance, then perhaps even a little bit of storage area or just indoor.
Correct. It's got hoists in there. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a little
Supervisor
bit.
Supervisor Noodle?
How big is this building?
8,000.
The building?
8,000 square feet and change.
The maintenance facility is almost 8,000 square feet. And then the attached offices and conference rooms and stuff comes to probably about another 2,500, the way it looks when I told it. So 10,000, something like
that. 10,000. Yes, sir.
What do you think the offices, conference rooms, et cetera, will be used for if further development on the building?
Yeah, we don't, we really haven't thought it through that far. There's could be any number of uses. As evidenced by what's going on tonight, these rooms are at a premium. If you look at the schedule for what goes on out here from a Western end standpoint, they're booked pretty solid every night of the week and on weekends. So could it be used as for folks that have further Western needs for public meetings and things like that? Could be. Does it make sense for the County Health Department to do a West End clinic out there? There's any number of things, and we haven't really talked about any of that because it's just too far out. But it is a nice office.
Doesn't this large enough to have a sheriff's substation?
Right, and that's another option. I mean, there's just
something we've talked about for years.
It's a very interesting building with a lot of possibilities because it's all in good shape. It's in all in very good shape.
I'm not planning on moving this baby way up there.
Yes, we are.
Sounds
pretty good. Yeah.
It takes me.
Another piece that we thought is a viable but conservative thing to plug in is if you look at that lot 4, when we split that with Highway F, assuming we get to that point, there's two potentially viable residential lots there that may not make sense for the county to keep. And if it doesn't make sense and it makes more sense to put them back on the tax rolls, that would certainly be an option because there wouldn't be any stewardship funds involved in the purchase of that property, so we could do whatever we wanted with that. If it made
Is
sense.
The idea south of the road or north of the road when you talk about
both?
Okay.
Both would be available. So we conservatively estimated those two lots to be valued today about $125,000. Because there are still, I can't remember now. I had him figure out the acreage on there, but I don't know if he put it on
this. Is 10.
It's 10, so I think it was still between 3 and 5 acres, each one of those lots. So, I mean, it's pretty sizable. They're pretty darn nice pieces of property.
Well, if this is a 10-acre parcel, then if there's four of them.
Two
lots. Yep. Okay, I got you.
Yep. Well, that road would kind of split. Well, yeah, if you wanted to subdivide it or something.
Well, there might be a minimum requirement on that.
It's an acre. It's an acre.
1 acre?
You can make 10 out.
So you could do, there's a lot of possibilities, again, with that property. So I think we're pretty conservative in valuing that at $125,000. The savings from not having to purchase Highway F right-of-way through that property, as well as the property, the lot that has the buildings on it, conservatively estimated that at $80,000. We figured we'd still have to fence that actual shop yard, making that our park's West End maintenance facility. Figured $27,000 for that. We figured the building is going to need to get cleaned up and spritzed up and a couple things checked out just to make sure there's some hoists in there and some other things. Kind of did a plug figure of $50,000 for repairs and renovation of the building just to get everything up to snuff. Cost of an appraisal, the DNR requires us, even though the bank did an appraisal a year ago on the properties, the DNR as part of the stewardship grant process requires us to get a fresh appraisal, which we're in the process of getting right now. But appraisals are about 45 days out. I assume it's because of all this negative stuff that's going on in real estate. The appraisal guys are fairly busy. So we've got that in play, though. I believe John signed that with the guy last week. So we've got that going. And then we had a general area cleanup. There's a lot of storage of old construction materials there, a lot of which would have value to both Gary in Highways and John in Parks, culverts, structural steel, tile, stuff like that. The goal would probably be to kind of cream what we'd need out of that stuff that realistically we'd use probably in the next 5 or 8 years, store that orderly, and clean everything else up just so that it would be gone for scrap. And so you'd probably, we didn't plug in a value of that, but there'd be some residual value to the scrap as well. So the subtotal of all that, those savings or revenues, is about a little over $1 million. So when you look at it, and you really look at the whole package the way it's laid out, it's about $500,000 investment up front, but when you look at everything that's going to either be saved or generated as a result of the property, you could easily, conservatively say that it's actually going to net us $500,000 if you play this out a few years. So that really is the, I think, the most proper way to look at the whole investment.
So any questions?
How much is that going to cost us if, for any reason, it's not going to go through?
Just the price of the appraisals.
Just the appraisal itself.
Because the phase one was done but at the expense of the bank. And there's no cost for the application itself. We had in staff do it. It was about, 350 pages of applications. So that's basically our main risk, is the appraisals that they require as part of this grant application.
Yes, Supervisor Riley.
And with the bank, it's going to be a regular offer. It's not going to be an option or anything, correct?
We made an offer. They countered it, and it's just about signed off. Yeah, it's a regular offer.
It's a regular offer.
It's not an option.
And it's obviously got contingencies built into it.
Yeah, contingencies for county board approval. That's the main one. Contingencies for getting the stewardship grant, that's the main one. Things like that.
Anything else, Supervisor? Anyone else?
Can you tell me what the current tax levy or tax roll for each one of these pieces of property is currently contributing to the county?
You got that one?
Yeah, I got it. Even if it's just rough.
I got it. From
okay.
Currently, it's nothing. They didn't pay it.
The bank's good.
Well, parcel one, which is the northern half, is I think that's it. Oh yeah, yeah. These two northern parts. The first one is $1,622. It's low because it's agricultural land. The next one, the big parcel, the vacant parcel, is $2,077.
That's parcel number two?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, here, this one?
Yeah.
Okay, and now how much is that one?
$2,077.
Is that also
agricultural?
Ag?
Yeah.
Okay.
Then the next one is the... parcel three is the Pond Lake Road one.
Down here?
Yeah.
So they consider that parcel three.
That's called parcel three on this attachment. That's generating a tax bill of $3,970.
And that's zoned residential?
I think it might be. Yeah. I think it might be.
Okay. Wait, that's all right. Isn't that important?
Yeah. The other one is where the building is.
Over here?
Right. And that one we called parcel four. And that's zoned M2.
Now, on here, we've got three to the west.
Three with
four
the
is over here.
Yeah, they flipped it. So on their appraisal.
Sorry, I didn't do the math.
Yeah, no. I'm just wanting to keep in my...
Okay.
When you tell me so four, it's really the one with the building, though.
No. Right, that's the one with the building. The one with the building is taxed at $9,686. So that's M2. That's not agricultural. That's, I think, manufacturing two.
manufacturing business or something like that.
I don't think it's mineral mining extraction. I think it's just because they have that building there and they do the construction work there, it's manufacturing too. So that's the taxes.
Now, the other question I have is we've got a sliver of land in here that is still appears either
yes.
It's municipally owned or privately held.
It's privately held.
Okay. Yeah.
And there's an access road. You can kind of see it discolored.
Yeah, it's a different
color.
Yeah, Carroll
and then
Road.
Above, yeah, that's Carroll Road. And then above that, it goes back to
the. Yep. So that's a residential?
Two residences.
Okay, yeah, I see the other one there. Mm-hmm. If the plan eventually is highway off, and I certainly see some value in that from just the transportation network perspective, do you have any idea? Is it, you know, what that easement would require, or I don't know all the terminology, but you're going to somehow have to get authority to put that highway off across.
Gary would try to negotiate a sale on that.
That hasn't even been worked on, right?
No.
But I know that you've been looking at F.
But we wouldn't be involving those two properties at all. We would already own what we needed.
There's just a little bit of...
You wouldn't know in this part.
Yes, we would.
No, you wouldn't. That's all carved out.
There's a little sliver. There's a little tiny sliver that comes in there, I think. It's right where the road, ends, I think.
It's very...
Is that right, Gary? There's like a little tiny sliver.
I know the property.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I was asking, because there's that gap in there. I mean, it probably benefit these guys, provided it doesn't bring too much noise. You know, they're set back there pretty far. I know, you know, at least in my district, there's a lot of homes that are set way back, and there's a reason they're set. They like their peace and quiet.
Yeah.
So if it all becomes a much more significant thoroughfare, then that could lead to a lot more traffic, I think. So if not, you're not able to negotiate that, that kind of puts a little fly in the ointment there with regards to the...
Well, we have the power of condemnation for the highway.
You certainly hate to.
No, we hate. We don't
exercise that.
We usually don't have to do that. Gary's pretty good at talking.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't be, just to clarify a little bit, as far as the Highway F piece, having the two pieces, that lot, what we're calling Lot 4 and Lot 3, definitely gives us the main puzzle pieces, but it doesn't. There still is some property to the west of this for that project that
would
need to
I
be considered
that.
For the actual, to actually construct the road. So I don't want to leave the impression that having these two pieces is the whole deal as far as, but it's two critical pieces that definitely make that road feasible.
I think we talked about that earlier, where it's $80,000 is kind of the estimate right now in order to gain the easement.
Those two, if we were to get those, just the easements through those two parcels, that's the estimate is about 80 grand.
Okay, excluding the portions over here where we
haven't
even talked about. Okay.
Yep.
And that's still privately owned, and he's going to say that.
And Gary actually knows more about that kind of stuff, but yeah.
Is that an area that, you know, and it's kind of hard to see it in here because it's not drawn in, but I see, you know, looks like some residential areas in here. If you kind of surveyed and got a feel for it, is that going to be a big problem?
Mike, we're going to slow down here a little bit. What we're talking right now is about the plan to apply for this grant. This would be way down the line. If you can see where Highway F comes in, here he has, you know, plans, and we know there's two residences there, but this isn't something that we would be necessarily anticipating to happen for a number of years. So the spreadsheet that was put before you here, this is showing the amount of money that would be saved not having to acquire this one later. If before you want to discuss any of this, you want to know about that, then we'll have Gary speak on it.
Okay.
But what you're going to have to do in the future here, you have to address the chair.
Okay.
And then we'll go to the people. Okay. You first address the chair. I know that you're new at this. And then we start discussion.
Okay.
So would you like Mr. Sisman to speak on that?
I would.
Okay. Gary.
Yeah, the alignment for Highway F has been in place for a number of years. In fact, as long as I can remember, it's always been on the regional transportation plan. So It's pretty well known to the residents out there that at some point in time in the future, this road will be relocated. Specifically to answer your question, there are two homes that would need to be relocated in order to make that connection on Highway O. And I know at least one of them, even recently, about that, because there's disclosures that need to take place as part of a real estate transaction. So that they're aware that at some point in the future it could happen. And if it does, there's a number of real estate acquisition laws and rights that the county's required to follow to make sure that those people are properly compensated for having to be relocated. So I guess that's a long answer to your questions. Yes, there would be two residents relocated as part of that.
Thank you.
Anything else? Any other questions? Discussion? Again, I just want to remind everyone, this is giving the authority for us to apply. It's going to two other committees, and it is also something that will come back to the county board before we accept any money for any type of grant. And at that time, the county board will have debate and have a chance to deny, not do any purchases, not do anything. On this property. So at this time, is there a motion on this? Motion made by Supervisor Nudo. Do we have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Supervisor Dodge. Any discussion on the motion?
This all came about fairly quickly, so it's still a substantial amount of money. And I understand this is about the grant, okay?
Right.
We don't have an obligation to it.
Right.
However, let's say the best some of these scenarios here are $300,000. We're still in the hook for potential if we want to go ahead, $500,000. Has there been any investigation of where that money is going to be coming from? And I understand we're talking about this grant, but it all ties together.
Yeah.
And it will influence my decision.
I think where it comes from, and you're going to find out, some other information here a little shortly. Where it comes from, actually, on this spreadsheet, is from the savings of what we're not going to have to spend, basically. The money at Fox River Park definitely is going to need to be spent, and I believe that was 400-some thousand?
512,000
for our West End maintenance building.
Which does exist.
The money eventually would be spent at the Katy Park for a building. Those are just two of the things.
Mm-hmm.
There is money that would be made over a long period of time on that asphalt and on the crushed concrete. So I think if you read the spreadsheet, we're actually saving at least $500,000 and possibly up to $1 million. What the county would be spending for this land would be about $500,000. But then we're not spending at least $800,000 on other buildings and things. I mean, I'm not going to promote, and I'm not mm-hmm. going
to,
this.
No, I'm going to ask you.
Yeah.
Just want to get
yep.
clarity.
Yeah, but those are, as Mr. Vash said, sometimes there's rare opportunities. And that's what the county board is going to have to decide.
Now, the other question I had was, as I read through this, the deadline, and we talked about was May 1st. Okay, obviously it's May 7th.
We applied for the grant.
Okay, and you did that before running it through the committee, correct? Is that a normal procedure?
Yep, if there's a deadline.
Okay.
Yep. Because the committee doesn't have to accept it, right?
Right.
Right.
Okay.
And there is a real big safeguard on this one, because there's two other committees. One is going to be land use, land development, and the other is going to be finance.
Now, because I don't know what was all included, and maybe you guys can comment, there was stewardship applied, you know, against this, this, and was it this one here, or a portion of this in here?
Portion of that.
Portion of this in here?
The land.
And that was in 350 pages. I'm glad I didn't have to fill that out. If any one of those parcels, okay, they decided that we're not going to pursue, don't want to buy it, but that affects the value or the amount of the grant down the road. But that doesn't necessarily affect the approval from the DNR. I don't know if I'm saying that right. So right now we're putting in that application for all of it.
I'm not sure.
It's a package.
Do you think it's a package for the DNR?
It's not broken into parcels. It's one thing to them with the three.
I can say this, too, that the reason we got stewardship money for the first purchase of KD Park is that across Highway KD is the New Munster Wildlife Area.
Right.
And the state was excited about having two large parklands close together, almost contiguous, separated by a highway. And then there's a municipal park to the south of KD also. So there's three parks in the same area. So I think they like size. I think they appreciate the opportunities for wildlife and people's recreation to have the contiguous parkland together.
Yeah, and I'm not opposed to it. It's just I know there's 234 acres here, adding about another 100 acres to it. That's a pretty good sized park.
Right.
How big of a park do we need, and does it long term in the county benefit the private sector to be taking that land out of potential other uses that could generate tax revenues? And that's why I'm thinking about this, and I haven't had a lot of time to really consider it. And I understand you guys are under the gun, and you know, opportunities present themselves, and you need to certainly take action. And we're talking about the application here.
Yeah,
but once it seems snowball rolls in, or starts rolling in government, it never seems to be able to stop. And so I'm carefully just considering these attributes. That's why I'm asking you if down the road we decide, well, no, this is a lot more, this section is something we're more interested in, because I know what you're saying, Chairman, and that is the road is down the road. But that does have to do with our infrastructure and the ability to affect commerce in the county.
Right.
More so than a increase of park size. Okay, that doesn't mean that I'm against park and recreations. I'm not. It's just you have a substantial amount of land already designated as a park area. And I just want to know, does that affect then, or does the grant get rejected and you have to reapply if the original application or the size of land changes? Or do we even know?
Well,
it would, from a timing standpoint, John, when's the next cycle? Because is this an annual cycle for the stewardship grants? It's once a year? So it basically, if we missed it, you know, this was our kick at the cat this time. So they won't come back to us. I don't think they, and I've been through it myself. But I don't believe they come back. They don't do Monty Hall with us.
No.
It's like you either get a thumbs up or a thumbs down on this application, and then it would be the next cycle through.
If we got the thumbs up, okay, but decided that, one of these parcels we just chose not to purchase. And understand, there's a lot of attributes and factors in here. You know, the bank negotiated on this thing, and would they then say, okay, that grant is no longer valid?
I think they cleared the deal.
Come back year? They wouldn't reduce it by a certain quantity.
No,
based on percentage reduction.
You have to start over then again the next time.
So what you send in is what they're going to be.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
When we did the KD Park, Meyer Material, who was then owned by the Pritzker family that owned all the Hyatts in the world, owned that land. They wanted to open another gravel pit in Kenosha County, which they did. They wanted a lot more money for that land. They had a development, naturally they had everything. They had a development agency in their corporation. They said they wanted to be good citizens, and we finally worked that out for $818,000, I believe it was. And the stewardship grant was $400,000. It was half. and they opened a gravel pit on the north side of Highway 50, and they were very pleased with that. So the Telmar Bank is not doing that. As Bernie said, we jokingly asked them for a donation, but they, you know, they're not doing that. But
we weren't joking.
They were.
The FDIC controls some of this because there's been insurance paid on this already because it's a foreclosure bankruptcy, $11 million bankruptcy to Telmar Bank. You know, they're working with us on what they need to get out of it and can pull. I think that all the communities are going to have to look at what our future expenditures would be. The key to this is what our Parks Department is going to spend, upwards of $800,000. And naturally, the county board won't have to vote for that.
Right.
Won't have to say that we need to do that. But, you know, we can take tours of, like, the Fox River Park. And I want new members naturally to take a look at the Katy Park and this property before the county board would ever vote on it. So I would think the committee's at least looking at these grand proposals would be a first non-dangerous step.
If the assessment is, I mean, the grant is given, does that lock that land in forever to always be considered park area?
Yes.
Or down the road, can the county sell some of it off? Or
no.
Okay. Yeah. Locked, loaded, that's it forever?
Yep, that's it.
That's the point of those grants, is to preserve those, anything purchased for Kemper Center, various things over the years.
Okay. There's an out, but it's very painful.
Okay. Not one we want to pursue.
No. And it'd take forever. Because the grant's actually some federal money, so the National Park System gets involved.
Okay.
Which is Department of the Interior, so.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor of the resolution to approve an application for Wisconsin Stewardship Grant to expand the Katy Park, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Abstain?
I didn't say what I was doing yet.
Oh.
Dustin?
Aye.
I will be abstaining, and I'll be explaining at the county board level, too. It's a, in my mind, not a huge issue, but I have rented a portion of this property in the past and still do. So I'm going to abstain from any voting on this. So the motion carries. We'll move on.
Thank you.
Director's report.
Again, for your new supervisors, I always, the Pringle Nature Center sends over their minutes and a list of their activities and their financial information. They're not real good at getting them here every month, but they try hard. So anyways, I always attach that so you can see what they do. They're a nonprofit organization, do a really good job of running the Pringle Nature Center. I'll give you an update on the Kemper roofs, and this was still damaged from the storm last year on the first part of July. The contractor, everything's finished. We did the walkthrough on Friday. You know, I'll be making the final payment on that. The only thing that's not done is a north cloister door frame. I had to hire a woodworker more than a finished carpenter because of the shape of the door and the frame on it in order to repair that. So he's still waiting. He's waiting on, of course, we're going back to the historical buildings. He's waiting for some historically accurate parts to come so he can finish it. The West End Park opening, we did open that on May 5th. And as the chairman said, it got a lot of activity, a lot of park visitors and fishermen. The update on our new playground equipment, the chess tables and arbiters are in at Fox River, the climber and arbiter is in at Old Settlers. There's an orbiter at Silver Lake, and there's chess tables and infant swings at Petrifying Springs. All the footings are poured now. For the rest of the equipment that's coming, we've got a couple merry-go-rounds coming out here on the west end on a climbing boulder at Old Settlers, and then a tot lot and a merry-go-round and a climbing boulder going into Pets. This rain has kind of slowed them down a little bit, but we hope to have this all done within the next week. We were shooting for May 16th for all that equipment to be installed and ready to go. The update on the Silver Lake Trail, everything's going well there. We have a meeting with the consultant. I believe it's either tomorrow morning or Wednesday morning. I believe it's tomorrow morning at 8:30 or 8 o'clock. And to discuss it with him, I think all the archaeological requirements have been met already and everything. So that's moving along, and I can report on that again next month. The dam removal, bridge, and roadway project at Petrifying Springs, we did not award either bid yet. We're waiting on a couple of the permits to clear. We're specifically one with the Corps of Engineers on a walk bridge that has to be removed. The other thing was we had our newest pickup in the fleet. We had sent a guy up to Kansasville to pick up a radiator that was repaired for a different vehicle, and he was coming down County Road B, and an elderly lady pulled right out in front of him, and he broadsided her, and she was okay. They were both shaken up, but it did $10,000 of damage to the pickup truck. Her insurance company paid for it, but it took us a month to get the truck back from the body shop. The other thing, I just wanted to report, we hit in our budget for a 100 horsepower tractor to use for mowing our bike trails. And I usually attach a few pictures. So that's a picture of the tractor with the bat wing, and that mower requires 95 PTO horsepower. And even though the tractor says 100 horsepower, that's just the engine, that's not the PTO rating. So it actually reduced the mowing of our bike trail all the way from state line to county line, and from where we pick it up over on Ian 22nd and out to Parkside from 5 days to just about a little less than two, probably about 14 hours. So it made a huge difference.
Do I have to go through you with a
yes,
question?
You.
All right. Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Yes, sir.
Do you guys trailer this tractor back and forth? Do you drive all that distance?
Nope. That tractor goes just about 35 miles an hour, and that's part of the beauty of it. We had to trailer all of our equipment before, all the way down to the south end. So this thing, you start mowing on the north end, you mow to Gateway, and you can zip right through town at the speed limit and get to 89th Street and start in there. The south end isn't as wide, so down there it's basically one past the state line and one back.
And it takes, what's the width of that mower there?
It's 16 foot.
They're that wide? Well, I suppose you got the grass on either side. And
well,
the center is...
But when you look, when you come up to the city section around 18th Street, some of those places, and I know Supervisor Dodge knows, it's very wide there. So it's probably taking four or five passes wide on each side to get some of those sections in the city. I know, like on the south end, just the fact that it can go down there and get down there, the guy isn't hooking up a trailer and a truck and loading a mower and putting the binders on it.
Obviously, it takes 2 days, right? So at the end of day one, he's got to kind of guess where he's going to end up. And
usually they go south.
Okay.
So then he's back this way by Pets. He's got the south end mode, and he's already clear up to Lockwood more than likely.
Gotcha.
So then it'd be the same as getting in your car and driving to Pets from there. So
okay.
35 miles an hour, that's a pretty good clip.
Yeah, they can move along.
Mm-hmm.
Through the chair.
Thank you. Sir.
We got just a simple question. I see that was it Kenosha Power and Light or something owns part of that property or is responsible for it?
That all belongs to We Energies. From
35th
Street to County Line, we have a lease with them. It doesn't cost us anything. It's just more or less an agreement to operate a bike path on it.
Okay.
John, I have one. Those new cement tables I saw at Five River Park.
Mm-hmm.
That... they're cool looking. that we do more of those than just that one location?
Yeah, there's at Pets. We have two of them in Pickering Springs.
And what was the theory behind those? That they...
We're just hoping to get folks to come out and do something different.
Yeah.
And, you know, they last forever. They double as picnic tables. And again, they're missing one seat on the other side for ADA for a wheelchair.
Yeah.
Or a hover around raft.
So, I mean, I never looked close at them, so it's a checkered chess table.
Checkers.
Yeah, checkers.
Checkers are.
Yeah, driving by, I didn't know what they were, but I thought they were nice even without that. So.
Yep.
Cool. So, any questions for Mr. Rudy? We'll move on to a golf. Old business, none. New business, director's reports.
I brought the map that was requested from the last meeting. We are working on the options for the Red 9 and what we will be doing out at the Brightdale Links, and that will be presented with the 2013 budget. We met with the Wadsworth Golf Charities Foundation this week to talk about some possibilities of outside funding that could supplement that project. So hopefully that's working in the right direction. I visited all the hotels, or many hotels in the area, plus the health clubs, and offered their members and guests a discount on our green fees, our card fees, range balls, and golf shop merchandise. So I'm hoping that really helps bring some more players in. I hit 26 of the hotels from around the area and up in Racine County. I hit the YMCA in Kenosha and Lake Geneva. I'm still working on getting into the Recplex, the Racine YMCA, the Wellness Center in Burlington. We also have worked a deal with the UW Parkside for a discount. So, you know, we're exposing ourselves to possibly another 10,000 to 15,000 additional players for the golf courses. So I'm very happy about that development. Our spring scramble was this weekend, Saturday. We had 112 participants. And everybody played 18 with cards and had steak dinner afterwards. Everybody had a really good time for that. We also had 36 players in our first annual Lady Spring Fling, so that went very well. The calendar of events is on our website, and it's updated, along with all of our websites and our coupons on the website and in other areas. We're sending out an email blast weekly, and I'm happy to report that our database, just in our POS system, is over 7,800 people, plus we hit the county with another about 500 or 600 different email. The food and beverage staff is receiving very good comments about the tar broiler and the new equipment that we've installed over at Brightondale. We started the fish fries on April 13th at both courses, and the tap beer is installed, so we are serving tap beer at both courses. So that's going over well. The irrigation project is proceeding nicely. All of the major pipe is done, and we have 8 holes out there done out of the 16 that we will be doing. We anticipate this project on the White Birch irrigation being done by June 15th. It should really improve the irrigation that we have on that White Birch. And the golf courses are getting great reviews on course conditions. The paving around the clubhouse and on the White Birch should be starting, the preparation hopefully will start this week and the paving next week. Also, the roof at Petrifying Springs Maintenance Shop will be starting within the next 2 weeks.
Thanks, Dan. And I know a month ago we were doing great, just like I was doing great in my business, and then things kind of went to hell. Have they gone to hell for you too?
No, we've been able to basically maintain over last year. We're more comparing with 2010 because that was such a great spring. And we're down a few memberships at this time, so we're formulating a letter and sending it out to all the members that have not signed up. And so hopefully that'll kick us back. But we're pretty close to that 2010 level within a couple $1,000s, and that was a great spring. So,
because we had some bad weekends now the last couple.
Yeah. And it was great having that tournament this weekend. I mean, we had 112 players you know, which really helped out, and all with the steak dinner, and so we got a $55 rate from all those people, so that really, you know, when we have our own events like that, you know, we always have them at Brightvale, and that really makes a difference.
Yeah, because those people wouldn't have come out golfing looking at the weather report.
That's for
but
sure.
But they're already paid.
Yep.
They came out. And, yeah. Any questions for Dan on the...
No, but I had a fish fry at Pets, and it was very good.
It was. Mr. Bat.
From the chair to Mr. Dreyer, you said that sales were up, right?
From last year, yes.
Yeah, last year and the year before?
We're right around the what we were in 2010.
All right, and then we, through this past year that I've been sitting out, we've been talking about Red Knight, and how is participation on the Red Knight course?
It's going well. I mean, a lot of people are playing it, you know. We've kind of eased people's fears that, you know, it's going to close this year, so they're happy about that. We've got a lot of positive comments that it has continued to be open. You know, we're hoping that, you know, with all the things that we've tried in the last 3 years of cutting expenses and boosting revenues, that, you know, things are going to be positive as we move forward. So, you know, we're with this Wadsworth company. You know, they are a national company that does golf charities. They specialize in these shorter courses, these 3-6-hole, you know, shorter courses. And they were thrilled with the property and the possibilities of what we have to do out there. They really do pro formas and you know, budgets and that type of thing with if we go that route with changes. So. You know, I think we'll have some very good options for you guys to discuss once the 2013 budget is being presented.
Anything else, Dustin? Any other questions for? Yes, sir.
When Wadsworth Company, is that like a golf course consulting or a golf course operations company, or?
They're actually a charitable foundation, yeah. And they're very big with the first tee. They're very big with the beginning golf going in different areas and trying to get more participation into the game, and so they do have a parent company that is a golf course construction company, but this is their own separate company, and it's a charitable foundation.
What are they, when you're working with them, how are you guys, you know, working together or synergizing, or is it you know, idea sessions, brainstorming, things like that, or how is it, what's that relationship, because I'm not familiar with them, and what's going on?
The PGA has an initiative right now with the Golf Course Architects Association of America and Construction Companies of America, golf construction companies, and you know, they're actually paying architects to come out and develop plans for, you know, getting beginners into the game and how, you know, you can affect your facility to get more people to play. And the Wadsworth Company is associated with Lohman, who has done our master plan. And Lohman has come out and they said that they would do a planning session of what we could do out at the golf course, being paid for by the PGA instead of through us, and show us, you know, different possibilities of, you know, an expanded range, like we talked about in the maps, and, you know, a practice area.
So, you know, and I know there's three. I've got my second option somewhere here, but have they looked at those, of the three options that are laid out there? And obviously, have they commented or given you some feedback on that? Likewise, are they looking at options 4, 5, 6, or have you got a feel for that yet?
Yeah, they are definitely looking at other options. They, you know, Lohman kind of gave us some feedback when we did those three options, so this was on the radar already. And they're really the people that are looking into the options rather than the Wadsworth Company. The Wadsworth Company is just kind of the financing behind it. They're the ones that saying, you know, I think it was $150,000 grant that they could come up with for three or six holes practice facility, or $250,000 for a 9-hole practice facility.
Okay.
You know, it's more working with our already contracted architect, golf course architect, and they're doing it, but they're just getting paid, you know, some other way.
Right.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify a little bit what Dan was saying, because at Wadsworth Group, we just met them formally last week. and it was a learning experience for me. Dan probably is familiar, more familiar with them, but me as a, I still consider myself kind of an outsider to golf, so I look at things a little differently. But the basic concept is this Wadsworth Company is a charitable organization funded by the Wadsworth family, which is a, they're like a three-generation golf course construction firm. And the dad basically set this money aside and says, you know what, golf as an industry is going to have to, in order to survive, create opportunities for beginners, because what happens is beginners take some lessons and then they get turned loose onto the Big 18 course. And there's no stepping stone. So Wadsworth specifically looks at nationwide assisting with the development of three-hole, six-hole, and nine-hole courses that are transitional in nature. So they actually work with the golf course architects to design courses that are that interim thing, so that not only do you get that person the first lesson, but you now give them a non-intimidating course that they can practice on, which also is still played by seasoned players as well. But the goal is to create, to fill that gap, so it's not a from here to there, and then they lose too many golfers in the process. They are funded, the any golf course architect, Dan referenced, that will help design this concept, a three-course, a three-hole, a six-hole, an executive kind of small course. They and the PGA is actually fronting the money for those design fees that would normally be borne by the owner to do that, to encourage this kind of thing. Because the industry recognizes that unless you get golfers and develop that next crop of golfers, it was good that Ricky Fowler won this weekend, because the PGA is very tuned into what needs to happen to grow the industry, and this is a part of that. So it was very exciting to talk with these guys, because as Dan said, they're willing to open up their checkbook, their charitable checkbook. If you do put in a three- or six-hole course, if it meets their standards and what they think will be successful as a business model, they'll cut you a check for $150,000 to get that constructed. If it's a nine-hole course, they'll cut you a check for $250,000. So it was something I wasn't aware of, and it's kind of exciting. So we're playing that out.
Did they initiate the contact with you guys? Was it through the architect?
Through the architect.
Okay.
Yep.
So it's, having more minds in this is a much better scenario than just going off of one opinion. So.
And we are currently researching other possibilities of other grants and looking into, you know, other ways of alternative funding.
All right, thank you.
Anything else for Dan? Yes.
What was projected for this year, and how are we doing based on those projections?
We have about $500,000 in the bank so far, and it was like $2.7 million was the total revenue figure projected for this year.
Did you have like a projection on a monthly basis, or how would you say that based on those projections, are we going to think that?
Things are looking, you know, good right now. I mean, like I said, we're about $12,000 ahead of last year, we're 5,500 rounds ahead. There's a lot of things that are going to factor into, our play for the rest of the year. I think all of our marketing efforts is pointing toward, you know, a strong season as long as we can continue with those efforts. I think that, we have, a lot better chance than we have in the past, you know, considering all of our positive changes, you know, to our expensive lines and our marketing.
So we should come up better than projections?
I can't say that we're going to be better than what the budget was, you know, but we're working diligently to make that budget.
So far?
Right, and we're doing very well.
Are we ahead of schedule?
The budget really isn't busted out by months. You know, we have one sum of what our revenue is supposed to be. And again, we're ahead of where we were last year. We're equal to, you know, what we did in 2010. 2010, we had a very, very wet June and very hot July and August. So, you know, if we get some cooperating weather that, you know, like we had last year, you know, then I feel very strong about what we're doing.
And you say we are ahead of last year?
Last year, yeah.
It is about the same as 2010.
Right, which was a great spring.
Okay, now the projection for 2012.
Yep.
Are they the same as they were in 2010 or 2011?
They're less. They're, so they're less. Less. Yes.
Than what they were in 2010
or 11. Our budget, we have less budgeted than we budgeted in 2010 or 11. We came through with less expenses, so we have to make less revenue to balance our budget.
We're up over $100,000 from last year, but like Dan had a tournament there this year where they're almost captured people because they've already paid and we had this, so he made some money. If it rains on a weekend between Pets and Brightdale, it can cost us $50,000.
Right, no, I understand that.
So, and that has happened in other years. So, no one really knows. It's their marketing plan and the work. It'll work if we don't get.
That's what I meant.
It could rain on a Monday and Tuesday, but if it rains on a weekend of two courses, that's the kind of money.
We are even about with 2010 right now. It rained every single weekend in June in 2010. It was, you know, just atrocious weather. So, I mean, that's where we fell short in 10. Hopefully this year we'll have much better weather, especially on the weekends. And, you know, we budget maybe $10,000 a day for weekdays and $20,000 to $25,000 for the weekends. So that's kind of where our budget is. So.
I believe it was about a couple of months ago, there was some vandalism there.
On the west
taken
end.
Care of now?
Yes, it is. Yep. We rolled out the greens and we did a little overseeding. We did some hand watering and, the greens were a lot better. I mean, the carts definitely cost us. I haven't received that invoice yet on exactly what it was. I mean, they cut all the wires and they popped out the ignition switches. And so that'll definitely come out of our, you know, automotive parts budget. But the greens are now, you know, back in good shape.
But we turn that into insurance, though, don't we, too?
Well, the insurance deductible is $5,000.
I'm sorry, the insurance is what?
Deductible is $5,000, so it's not. Well, it wasn't that high.
Right. So, anything else, Kate? Okay, Supervisor.
Two more questions. One is, when you talk about what you budgeted, $10,000 versus $20,000, is that expenses that you're talking about? $10,000 per day versus.
No, that's revenue.
Okay. And the other thing is if you look at your marketing this year, over maybe last year, year before, what? How do you see it? Are you putting more time and effort and energy into it? And what kind of, what's changed? And you don't have to go into all the details. Just in general, I'm just trying to get a sense.
We've reduced a little bit what our pricing, we were trying to get $32 weekdays and $44 weekends for all of our couponing and everything around across the board. Now we've changed it to $29 weekdays, $39 weekends, just to try and hit a price point, just not to be above, below that $30, $40 price point. So I feel that alone is going to help in our coupons. I know that we'll have to increase our sales to make up for those extra dollars, but I think that we will do that by dropping that price point. Also, you know, all of this stuff that I reported on tonight is new. I mean, all the contact with all the hotels, the health clubs, the YMCAs, Parkside, I'm trying to get into Carthage and Gateway yet. So all of that stuff is new, so.
And not to belabor your point, out of Brightdale, I believe Central High School plays out there, is that correct? That's our home course.
Central, Sherland, Lutheran, Carthage, and UW Parkside.
Oh, you lowered up pretty good.
Yeah.
And the only reason I was, because somebody had brought it up that Indian Trails is coming online, mm-hmm. and I think they had some interest in Petrified Springs. I understand there's a balance there,
right.
And the big thing is there's no practice facility. So,
and the big thing is I talked to them and I offered our services to them, but I said we are booked between 3:30 and 5:30 weeknights because of all of our leagues. We have 29 leagues over at Petrifying Springs, and there just is not any room between 3:30 and 5:30. And they said, well, then we can't use your facility. And I said, well, we'll be happy to bring you out to Brightdale. You know, we already have four schools, but. You know, we'd welcome you out there, and
They said, no, that's too far to drive.
Okay.
You know, and I said, that's what we have available for you.
And with the leagues as packed as you are, has there been any thought to potentially moving greens fees up a little on that to generate additional revenue? Because leagues are fairly loyal, to a point.
Right. We did actually lose two leagues at Brightondale, unfortunately, this year, and it was just through osmosis, really. It was just the coordinator of the league was retiring from their big place of business, and nobody else wanted to take it over. And, you know, for us to try and take it over for them is really difficult with them, you know. And so we lost them. And then Pets, yes, we really just charge a regular nine-hole rate. And through our study that Carthage did, you know, they said that we should, you know, actually lower the rates over at Pets and raise them at Brightondale. It's tough to charge a premium. We already charge a $10 reservation fee on the leagues, so that they have to reserve those times so that they have those tee times ready for them every single week. So an additional surcharge would be tough.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anything else for Dan? Okay, thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
Move on to highways.
We did a brief status report of the major highway projects on the county trunk highway system. I'm sure if you've been traveling in the vicinity of I-94, you can see that the state's already underway with their projects. But these are the three projects on the county trunk highways. On the sheet that I just passed out in the upper right, this Highway G, which is also 30th Avenue between 18th Street and 15th Street, that's being reconstructed into a four-lane urban roadway. The bids for construction are underway right now with a bid opening date of May 24th. Anticipated construction start would be around mid-June or June 15th, and construction completed in mid-September. In the middle of the page, the Highway K projects, that's also 60th Street in the vicinity of high school and middle school. Those bids are being advertised right now, and they will be open tomorrow. So we're anticipating a construction start later June, about June 25th, with the completion around November 21st. I would optimistically think that it would be completed considerably before then, but there are some complexities in that project, primarily doing with the railroad crossing having to be reconstructed and the signals rebuilt. The other project in the lower left, Highway C and MB intersection, is going to be reconstructed. We're still in our right-of-way acquisition process, so the advertising date and bid opening is yet to be determined, but I would still anticipate a construction start date of around July 1st and completion towards the end of September. Any questions on those three projects?
Yes, Mike.
On County K there, I know that's right next to Indian Trail and Mahone there, right?
Correct.
That section needs to be, because my daughters go there, so.
Oh, yeah.
Is there any, you know, I know you start in June and you can only start as soon as you can. Finish in November, obviously, school's back in session, and that makes it very difficult because I know how much traffic that road gets now with both those schools. Right. Is there any way to try and, without increasing costs, don't get me wrong here, to get it done before school's back in session or?
The project won't be done before school starts, but we are working. I work directly with Pat Fenimore at the Unified, and we are going to, at a minimum, allow all of the employee or teacher access on 60th Street, even though it's under construction. We're going to make sure that it's in a condition that at a minimum would allow that. Hopefully, depending on the circumstances at the time, you know, maybe we can get some more of the traffic through the construction. Otherwise, they'll be using the access on 158.
Okay, and yeah, which turns into a real.
Yeah.
And it, that's a divided four-way all the way, or is there?
It's four. It'll be four lanes. It will not be divided.
Okay, four lanes.
It's very similar to what's east of Highway 31.
Okay.
There will be a signalized intersection put in where that temporary signal is now. There'll be a permanent traffic signals put in there at access too. So, and this is actually phase one of a two-phase project. Next year we're gonna finish up the section between the UP Railroad and Highway H, and that entire segment then from 31 to Highway H will be four lane urban type roadway.
This segment that we're talking about right now is going to stop at the first set of eastern tracks.
Correct.
Or the second?
Correct, the first set. The
okay.
UP Railroad is the easterly set of tracks, yes.
And on the county CMB, is that planned for another roundabout?
It's a roundabout, yeah. And that, and we've worked very closely with the residents and the village of Bristol, and they all are supportive of that plan. So I mean, I think they really support most is the traffic calming aspects of that.
Slowing it down a little bit.
Slowing it down a little bit.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything else, Gary?
I got a few more things. Last Friday, I received a letter from Governor Walker awarding Kenosha County $284,206 to improve County Trunk Highway EZ, which is also 39th Avenue. If you're familiar with that area, as you head south out of the city, it's a four-lane roadway. Then it converts down to a three-lane roadway, then eventually a two-lane roadway. Well, what this project will do will convert the three-lane section into a four-lane section, and then there's another project that we're partnering with the Village of Pleasant Prairie to finish the four-lane section all the way down to Highway 165. So we'll have, when those two projects are completed, EZ will be four lanes from the city all the way to Highway 165, which is, from our traffic standpoint, is what our long-range goal was to accomplish. So that's good news about that project. Also, at the same time, there was funding awarded to both the town of Summers to improve 47th Avenue and to the town of Wheatland to improve a segment of Karcher Road. So Kenosha County did really, really well in this local road improvement program awards by the state. That was good news, particularly for the towns who are really it's really difficult to fund these projects on the town level because they're so incredibly expensive. So that was very good news. Starting today, we are starting our new employee work schedule. Starting today, our employees are going to be working four 10-hour days during the week. We are keeping five employees on the regular 5-day, 8-hour shift, just so that we have some coverage on Fridays in case of issues that come up, and they always do. So the regular work hours will be from 6 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Thursday for the majority of our employees. The sole purpose of this is to increase efficiency. We in the summer type operations that we do, there's a tremendous amount of mobilization involved in getting to work sites and setting up work zones, setting up particularly the paving crews. So we're just strictly looking at it as a increase in efficiency of our operations, and time will tell how successful we are, but I know that over half of the counties in the state do change over to these work hours in the summer, and there's good reason for it because we do find an increase in efficiency. So that began today, and we'll tentatively be on that schedule till about the 1st of November.
Dennis, you're chair. Yes. How do the employees feel about the 10-hour days? I know personally, I think that's nice, but how do they feel about it?
The vast majority, I believe, were okay. There were some that weren't, and in fact, those were the ones that we have on the stayed on the five 8-hour days. So. Again, time will tell. I mean, things will come up, and we'll adapt as they do. But at least after one day, not hurting anything.
I concur with the Supervisor Dodge. I think it's a good thing. I think that, but it takes some getting used to. It's actually beneficial that if you didn't want to do it, because it kind of fills in for your Friday. What is the timing again? Is that May 1st to November?
November 1st.
Okay.
Yes. And we just need to make, we need to get it back on our regular schedule for our winter operations.
That I certainly can understand. Is this something that you just knew other counties were doing? And, you know, for instance, where I work, we go to summer hours where it's actually, we don't get Fridays, so you'll do 4 9s and a 4.
Oh.
And if you want that 4 off, you take a vacation. But and that goes for Memorial to Labor Day, and I think it's a great idea, especially if you're an outdoorsman or you want to spend time with your family, and you can make a 3-day weekend out of it. It's really a great morale booster. I think that you'll find that, you know, not everybody's going to love it, but I think the majority of people will love it.
Good.
I think it'll work good.
The last thing, the county do contractual work for the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. We maintain all of the state highways, the interstate. The last 2 years, and now I've received notification again this year that they are reducing the maintenance, level of maintenance on the state trunk system. Couple of the items that are going to be most noticeable is they have directed us that we are only allowed to pick up litter once a year in the spring on their highways, and we are only allowed to cut the grass once per season on all of the state highways. So it's been one of the most noticeable and probably one of the most complained about policies that the state has chosen to take, but that's their directive. We're the contractor to them, and we'll do as directed. So some of the local municipalities, the City of Kenosha and the Village of Pleasant Prairie particularly, have chosen to pick up some of this work that the state no longer does. Some of the residents adjacent to the highways are doing some of the work. So some of it kind of spotty is getting done. We've been told in no uncertain terms that we are not to do it, and we will follow their direction. So I'll make you aware of that policy is continuing.
Look at that, 2 years ago, right? And then last year they loosened up a little bit, and we did it twice.
Yeah.
And we also did near some intersections and turns.
Right.
But no, they don't want us to do any of that.
They will allow us to mow within 500 feet of any intersection just for vision purposes. So we will continue to do that.
How many times?
As many times as we feel is necessary.
And then we drive the tractor 2 miles down the road to the next one without mowing.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's not, not the most efficient way.
Through right middle.
I want to go back for a minute on the four-day work week.
Sure.
I believe you say that their hours will be from 6 a.m. to 4 p.m.?
Correct.
That will be 10 hours.
Correct.
I mean, they're not going to take any lunches or they work straight through?
There's two short break periods during the course of the day that they will take. But they'll be paid break periods during the day. At about 9 o'clock and 1 o'clock.
And no lunch.
No lunch. And that was a discussion we had with some of the employee representatives, and that was what they preferred to have it that way, so that they could get out at 4 o'clock rather than later.
Anything
it works out well for us. It works well. How well for our operations that we have a continuous flow through the course of the day, or at least as much as possible.
Anything else here?
Nothing.
All right. Thank you. Facilities, courthouse landscape.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman. Hi, for the new members of the committee, I'm Frank Martinelli. I'm the engineering project manager for the county, so welcome. The courthouse landscaping project, we included in your packet a layout of the landscaping. I've got a larger one if you want me to put it up on the board.
As long as you got it.
Yeah. This was a collaboration with Barb Larson from the UW Extension Horticulturalist, and Mike Schrant. We were lucky enough to have him on our facilities, head of maintenance at the job center, and as a family business for years, they have been doing landscaping, so he's got over 20 years of landscaping involved.
May not work quite as good. Is that got clips on it, Frank? Otherwise,
thank you. So we looked at what the kind of the current landscaping was from. It was done in the late 80s, and the pros and cons of that, and also Barb Larson did a historical background of the original landscaping and found notes from the architect, and that was much more of a minimalist for the time. So that was approximate work. I don't think we've got it here. So what we came up with after some research and many hours with is kind of a hybrid of what was originally there by the architect and kind of a modernization of what they did during the 80s. The original architect, he did the landscaping. It was very minimalistic. In his little writings we found, he didn't want to take away from the building itself. He didn't want the eyes to be drawn or covered up. So he had kind of some evergreen, low lying bushes around the perimeter here. If you remember the original or the landscaping from the 80s, we had rather large trees at the corners and in the front here, which when we ended up tearing it all down, really looked like a big change. It was kind of stark, but then people realized they could see the lines of the building much better. So that's kind of where we came together after several meetings, both from Mike's experience with landscaping and Barb's experience with horticulture, that this layout and these particular combination of trees and shrubs, and they were picked for trying to make this a minimizing maintenance over time. As you pointed out, that the the landscaping had kind of not looked very good over the years because they weren't putting the time into it. So we tried to create landscaping that was going to still look good but would minimize the time, and that was disease resistant and insect resistant. So this is kind of the layout that we came up with.
First question is, who's going to install it?
Well, we're actually going to do that in-house.
Right.
To save money. Parks and Highways was able to clean this up before they got into their busy season.
Right.
Mike Schrant is actually going to be doing it with work crew. He's going to be the lead guy. So we're all doing it internally. Really, we just have the cost of materials for all this, which we get wholesale through our agreements, will be right about $15,000.
Where are the plants coming from?
Geez, you know what? He told me the nursery. I can get that for you. It's who we have an agreement with Parks and Golf with.
Maybe Marianne.
Marianne. Yeah.
Marianne.
I'm not 100% sure, but I'm thinking that's who it is, Marianne.
That's just plain stupid, to be blunt. That's one of the most expensive places you could ever buy a plant from.
I have no idea.
I've done this for 42 years.
Oh, no.
Why would you have an agreement? Since when do we have an agreement with Marianne's?
Yeah, it predates me. I know that it's been... I don't know that that's an exclusive supplier either. I don't think that's the case.
I'll double check for you.
Yeah, because Mike wouldn't normally.
Yeah.
So I don't know where we're getting the plants from, if that's even been decided.
I mean, this is just my opinion here, and I don't want a plant bought. I'll raise holy hell if we buy plants from Marianne. Marianne is buy from a wholesaler. Marianne has one little area where they grow plants, and they're one of the most expensive places you could ever buy a plant. We have 4 to 6 growers in Kenosha County that all can supply every plant that I read on this list.
Yeah, we'll definitely go back and check it. Mike's a pretty practical guy, and so I would have thought he would have raised a red flag. But
he might have a relationship with Mariani. Well, sometimes you don't go further than your relationship.
Sure. We'll find out, but it wasn't his agreement. It was whatever was already set up with Gulf for their plans.
You want me to tell you what this plan list would cost if I dropped it off at the courthouse? $6,000-$7,000. If Paul Swartz Nursery dropped it off, if the Swartz Nursery in Kenosha dropped it off, if Breezy Hill Nursery dropped it off.
Well, we'll certainly go back and verify.
Go back and verify.
Sure.
Well, anybody else have any questions? I'll tell you what, I was worried about the layout. Layout looks fine. Okay. Layout looks fine. What are you going to do from the plant beds to the sidewalks?
Grass.
How? What type of grass?
Sod, I believe.
Sod. Anybody else?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
There is some grass already there, correct? Or is that all been torn off?
They killed it all.
Yeah, they did. Okay, couldn't remember last time.
Yeah, we're going to recreate it.
And is, get back to the sod versus seed. Seed just seems to be a lot more hardy in the long term. Sod just seems to be, my house, the guy put in sod, and it just seems like a constant battle as opposed to my neighbors and getting see that there's. Now, gives you instant grass, and with pedestrians walking, cutting corners, I understand that, you know, you're going to end up having, and it is harder to get a seeded lawn going, but I think it might be more hardy. The other thing is on these bushes in the corners, they're lilacs, they don't get, that's not too bad, but they do start to grow. And, you know, you're trying to keep this kind of a minimal maintenance, upkeep type of thing, so I don't know the type of bush with regards to that. Is it a slower growing one? Okay, they can get big.
They purposely, the variety they picked was exactly for that reason, because the ones they had in corners before did really grew too too tall.
And then you get real woody.
Correct. Yeah. And they were trimming them more. Yeah. Or they didn't go in and trim them because they needed the maintenance.
And you have a lot of annuals in here or some perennials?
Actually, mainly perennials.
Okay.
Mainly perennials.
Great.
So try to keep the maintenance down. Yes. And the ground cover will grow together.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Actually, just touching upon it too, these yellow symbols we have in there, actually the ground lighting, which we have a resolution coming up further in the agenda here. But if you'll notice, if you've gone by the courthouse, we had, there was lighting out in the grass and the lawn here on the sides, and it really was beating all the tears. It was the 4th of July, people were in the lawn, you know, or kids kicking on more. If you mow the lawn, say 20,000 times over 20 years, you know, one of those times you hit them with lawnmower. So what we actually did was with the new technology of LEDs, low profile, longer lights, more energy efficient, we're able to bring them up closer to the building, and we worked both with the landscaper and the lighting engineer to get the right dimensions, and we brought them within bed here so that they should both not fall, hopefully, less out of the way for any vandalism, and also they're completely out of the way of any mowing.
And is the intent of the lighting to illuminate the building, or kind of that, you know, lower luminous and in outdoor this, lighting at night?
Yeah, in this case, it's to illuminate the building.
Okay.
If you remember, kind of, we're coming to a similar look of how it was lit before, lighting the building, the columns, the second floor, but also from the base. It's a beautiful building, lit up at night, but unfortunately half of those lights were broken, out of commission, the lens was broken, so the lighting was very, I mean, back in the 80s it was beautiful, early 90s.
I'm assuming that's a handicap access ramp?
Yes, yes, that's a handicap access ramp.
Okay, retail, $9,440.
Well, definitely, and I'll go back and check. They might have, you know, made sure that they gave us a number that was...
Right, but you're talking wholesale.
Oh, no, you're right.
I'm saying
we're
retail.
We're supposed to, as far as I understood, it was supposed to be a wholesale agreement. So.
Yeah, so wholesale should be half of that. And we're talking $15,000. Okay, who pays the bill?
It would come out of the budget for the courthouse restoration.
Okay.
So there's no reason not to re-examine
Well,
when I say who pays the bill, I know where it'll come out of. Who pays Mariani?
Well,
your landscaper or the Kenosha County?
Oh, Kenosha County directly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Kenosha County directly. Yeah, ultimately, it'd be my signature.
Right, and a check directly to Mariani.
Correct.
If that's the right place,
I'm not sure that it is.
So it sounds like it's the right place. If
it could be based on what you're saying, pricing.
No,
wise,
I'm not raising a bitch here. I'm just saying that's just nuts.
That's
and we can't do
good
it.
Good to know. Yeah,
we can't do it.
That's good to know.
I just figured retail prices for the whole job, $94.40. And I figured
that's retail.
I figured it high.
Yeah. Okay, so then
I figured it high. So
that's good to know.
I mean, I'll resign from the board and drop all this shit off. You pay me $15,000 of them, and I'll run again in 2 years.
We'll certainly go back and check all the numbers and come back with the committee.
I'm telling you guys order this stuff, and I find out it's coming. There'll be holy hell raising. Yeah, I say this type of stuff sometimes, and then it still happens.
Can we just wait it before they do order it to come back and order? Maybe to get a couple of estimates or something like that?
Well, I think what would be interesting for a change would be for us to see it in writing. So let's do that. You bring it to the next meeting. And what I'd like us to do is to actually buy from Kenosha County.
Isn't that... Well, if that was the place, they're not even in Kenosha County.
They're in Chicago. Northern suburbs.
Yeah.
Well, we'll double check who that, yeah, that was. We'll have a bill of material for you.
But otherwise, great job. Nice looking.
Yeah, like I said, awesome. Larson and Mike Schramm.
Yeah.
Put a lot of good work in. And also, yeah. And, so, yeah.
But I mean, you could hire a guy to do this retail. He would charge you $94.40 for the plants, half of that again. You'd get the whole thing installed, leave our crews at home or do something better. And it'd cost you about $13,000. Have it installed.
Well, definitely. We'll come back to the committee.
Yeah. Unfortunate for you, I've done this for 42 years.
Actually, fortunate for the county.
Well, maybe not. You ain't going to say that on the way home, but...
Hey, you know what it's supposed to cost now.
If you don't catch it, somebody else will.
No, they wouldn't.
And it's better.
That one, nobody would.
Yeah. That one, somebody's getting the trades. Yeah.
I couldn't tell you what this radio analysis is going to be. Radio tower analysis, right?
So this is just an update to the ongoing 60th Street Tower replacement project. Just to bring the new members up to speed, we had climbed all of our remote towers that are part of the county's emergency communication system, radio communication system, in December and January this year. The only one that has significant issues is the one on 60th Street, the one where the old highway garage used to be on 60th, just east of Highway 31 on the north side of the road. That tower, although, I'll paraphrase basically the report that we got, the structural analysis, basically that tower, if there were one of two fairly unlikely weather events, one would be if we had an ice storm, which now, thankfully, we're past that for the season. Ice storm that would build up ice 3/4 of an inch radially around the tower members, and a 35-mile-an-hour wind, that tower would be at risk of falling over. The other scenario would be a summertime event, and if there were 90-mile-an-hour winds, the tower would be at risk. With its current load, it's actually... the tower itself, to support itself, is already over capacity from an engineering standpoint. So it's in pretty bad shape, is kind of the bottom line. So we need to look at a replacement site. The land that it sits on is 0.16 acres, fairly L-shaped little. Bottom line is, reconstructing a tower on the plot that tower exists on right now is not going to be economically or logistically viable. So we started to look for sites that would, both from a functionality standpoint, be at a proper elevation, as well as location. The thing that's nice about the 60th Street Tower is for the east communications, it's pretty much dead center in a north-south direction. So if that tower were taller and in better shape, it would cover the eastern part of the county much better than it does right now. Right now, the KPD, actually, because they can't locate some of the equipment they need to on that tower where it needs to be because it's not tall enough, they've got a remote site at Tremper. They've got a remote site on some water towers throughout the city, and the bottom line is there's no media here. There are some dead spots in the city where they don't have coverage right now. So, bottom line is we're looking at a site for a site, hopefully a municipally owned site, to construct a tower, hopefully this year yet, is the plan. Because we would like to have a tower up and equipment migrated off of that 60th Street Tower onto the new tower before the snow flies, if at all possible. We identified five sites that potentially would work. The one that looks like the highest likelihood and the one we're working closely with the water utility on right now, as well as of last week, the city, to see if it's going to be a viable site, is a lot on the corner of 50th Street and 52nd Avenue. So if you can picture that, it's directly behind Shopko. It's directly north of Shopko. The road that runs on the east side of Shopko's parking lot is 52nd Avenue. And if you take that, it's basically the northwest corner. And it's it's basically the corner of that industrial park there that has a number of construction companies. The water utility owns that corner lot. It's just over 2 acres, if I recall, and the water utility doesn't use it for anything right now. There's a concrete slab that's left from a building was there at one time, and that's it. And so we initiated a conversation with them to see if that's a lot that would be available. The water utility, at least on initial consult with them, has been open to that particular spot. We've looked at it from an engineering standpoint. It's about 695 feet above sea level versus the one at 60th Street's about 708 feet, so it's a comparable from an elevation standpoint. It looks like it can accommodate either a self-supported tower or a guy wire supported tower with some little bit of machinations, the guy wire one. We have basically initiated a conversation with the water utility. We've initiated a conversation with the city as well, because we would ideally like to look at some variances for setbacks if we did go with a guy wire supported tower, which there could be some economic as well as functional advantages to that kind of tower. We've initiated those conversations just literally last week. The other thing we did is we initiated a request to the FAA to see if that's a viable spot from theirs as its relationship to the airport. So we're just in the beginning stages, but I'm hoping by next committee that we have some definitive answers on whether that's going to work or not for us. And if it will, the anticipation would be that there wouldn't be any, being a municipally owned piece of land, we wouldn't have to be purchasing anything. So that's what we're trying to do.
So we just pass a resolution that give the water utility quite a usable easement. When your initial discussions were had with them, was there money involved, or was this going to be something? Because they have their police department and fire on our town.
Right.
So they're not talking about us making to buy this.
No, no, no. There hasn't been any conversation about purchase. The only thing that we've talked about is possibly because we're going to have a fiber loop that goes down 31 or down Washington Road, is that if there's going to be any kind of compensation, it would probably revolve some type of a deal where we hooked up the water utility to our broadband as part of it, because they don't have any broadband service out there other than, I think they're using the same thing that KPD uses, which is commercial grade Roadrunner.
You say probably, but you know, we haven't had great luck with the city in the last couple of years.
I know.
And when it gets to the aldermen and things, then they might all of a sudden start.
Right, and that's the reason that we focus on the water utility. Why we're trying, because there were other lots that were identified actually in Nash Park, just up the street from the 60th Street Tower. And for that reason, we thought working with the water utility, which is semi-autonomous in how they function, the only thing that we would need from the city is some flexibility on some of the zoning and setback stuff that's built into.
They don't control the money for the water utility?
No. It's just they have their own board, and it's kind of, like I say, it's semi-autonomous. I won't say it's completely autonomous, but it's more autonomous. Maybe the city guys can speak to it better than I. Yeah, you were an alderman. Yeah. They have more. That was one of the reasons that, because there was actually the land at Nash Park just a couple blocks west would have been, but for that very reason of the city relationship, we said, it's probably, if we can do something with the water utility, it'll probably be a cleaner, easier process.
But maybe we should still think about holding up our resolution on that easement to the county board if there's no hurry on it. Unless you think they're that clean. I mean, I haven't had a good deal with the city in 10 years.
The only thing I think that we've got going is because the KPD, the guys within the KPD, the Captain Ron Bartholomew, who does all their communication stuff, when we ran this by him, I know that he's got a band-aided, again, the press isn't here, Mickey Mouse approach that he's not happy with to create. So if when we talked to him and said, if we can get a tower up, we need you to kind of push as well behind the scenes here so that you end up getting what you need to fix your radio system once and for all.
So we wouldn't have to negotiate with the city at all?
The only thing we'd have to negotiate, like I say, is on the zoning side of it. If we can get flexibility, potentially for the setbacks, and there's some, if you look in the zoning ordinance, they have quite a bit, there's two pages that specifically deal with radio towers, and some of it, and how far it's set away from buildings and some other things, we need some flexibility. Those are the two things we need from the city, if we're able to work it out, is some variance and some flexibility on the zoning side. But we shouldn't need anything in terms of the arrangements for actually constructing.
We just gave them an intersection, and now they're arguing amongst themselves. First they were arguing with us. Now they're arguing amongst themselves about the intersection. So, God bless us.
No,
Gabe?
Yeah. Even with the water department, I believe even though they're by themselves, everybody on the board there, they're aldermen. So
yeah, there's all really, on the board, too.
Really, indirectly, we will be dealing with the city, regardless.
Again, we thought looking at a municipally owned property was going to be the most economic. In the big picture, every taxpayer's interest, it's in the, if we can work something out with these other municipalities.
Oh, it is.
If we can.
And it's a beautiful deal, and we're willing to pay for it. The only problem I've had, and I've never been involved with these people, but I mean, seriously, since I was county board chairman, we've had nothing but trouble with this city. We've been in lawsuits, and it's crazy stuff that goes on.
We got a new council now. We got a different council now.
They're arguing about their own street that we just gave them. What stops them?
With all the respect on that, I think that's a bunch of crap. Because they always try to blame it like the Fab Five or whatever. Well, there are 17 aldermen. If they said that it was five of them holding everything up, what happened to the other 12? And the only thing they were asking is they were asking questions, you know, because administration. They're both at fault, don't get me wrong. Aldermen, administration, and everybody. But it's a war going on between them, and now there's a war going on with the county, pretty much.
Well, no, they're all a bunch of clowns.
And
it makes no difference. I just don't want to be involved with them if I don't have them.
Exactly.
Why would you want to get involved with a bunch of morons?
It's just the only thing that I disagree is when not, and not, I heard that from a couple of the county board supervisors. Well, we have a new alderman now. Well, just look at this. They can't even put two stop signs in there. They got the alderman. It's the mayor's aldermans. Why aren't they doing it?
Well, maybe I started something I shouldn't have, but we'll we've got to look at it. We need to do it.
That's what I'm saying. I don't disagree with anything you guys are saying, because we all know what it, but I think we, in the taxpayer's best interest, we still owe it to try to work something out.
Oh, we have to proceed.
If we can't. We can't. But we got
to
at least give it
whatever
a
you can work
run.
Out, then we'll
bring it back.
In that general area, there is some residential. I'm not sure how high this tower is. Is there any problems with?
There's three homes. It would be on the southeast corner that are multifamily, like two unit side by side type things. I believe whatever we'd have planned would still technically, from a fall zone standpoint, it won't reach to where those folks are at. How the, you know, we haven't engineered it out that far, but
you know
just
how
preliminary.
Tall it is,
yeah, 330 feet.
Okay.
It's a pretty good sized tower. But based on that lot is about 400 feet long, and it's about 200 feet wide, and depending on where we place it in there, its position relative to the Shopko building and the those houses that you're talking about, those are the only, to the west, there's a small construction kind of marshalling yard. I don't think there's even a building there. And to the north, there's a small business, Patco, I want to say, Industries. And I believe, depending again how it's sited and without all the details, there should be a place that we can get it where it's, it'll definitely be a hell of a lot better than the fall zone we got now for the 60th Street tower and where it's at.
And,
I guess.
And obviously you haven't gone out and had it engineered, so you know, the options are still still possibility. A guy where it is going to be less costly than just a mono or monolithic type tower, but then you've got the spread of those guy wires.
Right.
And we just don't know enough yet about it.
Right. That's where the setback, though.
Is there room for that setback?
Yeah, if we can get, there's a 25-foot setback right now in the zoning ordinance, and if we can get some flexibility with that, that would make the guy wire tower more possibility.
And is that zoning through the city?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Those are the things where we need the flexibility. So we'll kind of see how that goes. That's basically it, though, as far as the radio tower goes.
Okay.
Any timing, sorry about that. Any hey, we got to get it done by, or any goal?
The goal is to have a tower constructed, if possible, by November 1st of this year. Otherwise, we'd have to put it off till next year. But the goal is to get it up before the snow flies.
And this is the only tower that there's any urgency, and there really isn't a life and death urgency on this one either.
Right, right, right. It is not a life and death. It's just in two very unlikely but potential situations that it could right. be a problem.
We'll move on to the Brookside Facilities Survey.
Here I'll try to be brief and as I can. Brookside had a facility survey done last December. From an operations standpoint, they got perfect marks. From a facility standpoint, because there was a new inspector involved in the process, he found a number of things that have existed in the building since it was opened in 1995, and he cited us for those. We've corrected, if there was a total of 15, we've corrected 14 of those sites at minimal cost, and they were things that existed since the building was open. One of the, there's actually two things that were found that, again, have existed since the building was opened. The issue we're dealing with right now is a bit above, it's in the attic of the building, and it's where all the smoke barrier walls are, and there's defined smoke barrier walls for obvious reasons in that facility. Well, there's penetrations in those smoke barrier walls from various ducting, structural members, and so forth. And none of that was fire stopped the way it's supposed to be. Problem is, there isn't a clear definition of exactly how some of that stuff is supposed to be fire stopped. So what we did is we got C.G. Schmidt, the original contractor that put that up in the mid-90s. We've got them on board. They're actually going to assist when we determine exactly what we need to do up there. They're going to do it on their dime. And that is very rare, I think, because the warranty ran out on this thing years ago and the statute of limitations. Bottom line is they're going to work with us to get those things covered on their dime, with the exception of some, there's some fire doors up there that we agreed to buy because they were spec'd wrong originally. And so there's not everything up there, but 98% of what's going on, they're going to cover on their dime. We were also, we took the time to get an engineering judgment from an original equipment manufacturer of some fire-stopping materials, Hilti Corporation. We got them to look at it and say, well, this is what we'd recommend doing with that. We then got an architect involved that the architect that designed that building originally no longer exists. They went out of business, and there's another architect firm in Milwaukee that purchased the remnants of that firm. We worked with them and were able to talk them into helping us out as well, because they still build nursing homes. And because this fire-stopping thing remains an issue on not only new construction, but old construction like Brookside, we got them to help us out at no charge. They took the engineering judgment, they reviewed it, they put it on their letterhead. We submitted that to the state last week, and the state blessed it. So it's not only given us a clear direction on what we can do up above in the attic now, and once we do it, my worry was if we didn't take these extra steps, we'd do something, and the next inspector would come in and say, well, that's not what I want. And because there isn't anything clearly defined by the state, it's up to that inspector. Now we got something clearly defined by the state. It's accepted. It's now going to set basically the precedent going forward on how you address these issues. We're meeting with C.G. Schmidt this Thursday at 10 o'clock to develop the work schedule to get that work done up above in the attic. So that's the one that we had a September 4th deadline to have completed as a result of the survey last year. So that I'm confident we're going to get taken care of. The one issue that will remain is the other thing that the inspector found was above the acoustic ceiling, there's drywall, there's a drywall deck that is a lid across the entire building.
Screws.
All those screws and all those seams were supposed to be taped, and none of them were. So we're still going to work through developing a plan to address that. We were cited for that, but we were able on appeal to get it tossed on a technicality. But it was on a technicality. The guy wrote up the site wrong. So we know the next time he comes down, which will probably be in November or December, he's just going to recite it. So we have to develop a plan to get that addressed. So after we get this attic thing taken care of, then we're going right into that, and we'll figure out a way to address that. So that's where the whole Brookside thing is at.
Okay. Air handling.
Yes, for Brookside, the units are on order with Train. They're set to be delivered the week of the 14th. We've got Just Service was the company that won the bid. We've got them coordinated. Actually, I'm meeting with them tomorrow morning. We're doing a walkthrough of the site with their electrician. And we're also having the digital controls updated through Kane Energy. So we everything looks to be good. We're going to get confirmation of shipping on Wednesday.
Tell them how many units are total at Brookside. How many we're replacing now, just so they know we're not done with the project.
Correct. There are 5 units total at Brookside. We're replacing 3 of them this time, and one of them's in really bad shape. The 2 compressors are keeps on blowing the fuses. Not only are we replacing them, but it turned out that those units from day one when they opened could not keep the building cool and dehumidified when it got above 90 degrees, right. And they were literally running water with sprinklers over the coils to keep it cold. So once we learned that, we had an HVAC engineer, we went back through it, and there's 2 units that were increasing the tonnage on by 10 tons, and we're correcting some ductwork deficiencies that were originally in the building. So not only are they going to be replacing units that are going bad, but it will keep the building, and we'll be saving a ton of money on water and our roof and everything else.
Right, and for those of you that are new, which is everybody, this is all in this year's budget. This is all planned. This
correct.
Is nothing new to any.
Correct. And next year, we're replacing the other 2 units that are also.
Right. And that's all also planned.
Correct. All planned.
No breakdowns, just a balance of taking care of business here.
Just for information, what's the cost on that?
Cost?
Roughly.
Good question. We've got, I think it was roughly $120,000 for 3 units with just service.
We'll move on to plumbing.
Plumbing, we didn't have as good a luck with this one.
You've been sitting there all night just to get to this point.
I was kind of hoping you'd forget about me.
Really, at night?
No. Just one quick question on the AC. Is there any anticipated energy efficiencies
for yes.
the pickup? Was your engineer able to estimate that? Or,
yes.
I know it completely depends on the weather.
In fact, the newer units by federal statutes need to be more efficient than the ones that were 16, 17 years ago. But not only that, but we're the digital controls, which was with Tracer Summit, and the motherboard blew out, and they wanted $15,000 to upgrade us, and Ray had brought in Kane Energy to provide the backbone for their security system, which the HVAC piggies back on. So the backbone infrastructure is already there. So we're putting in new digital controls. So both for the units, and the digital controls, well, for the units, we're getting money back from Focus on Energy because we're putting in more efficient units, and we've submitted it for digital controls also to get a refund. They're still looking into that because they've changed some things on their side, but so not only are we getting the energy efficiency, we're getting money from Focus on Energy for these.
And one of the biggest things you guys did was the kitchen, because
yes.
the kitchens are hogs, and they had a ventilation system that would run 24/7 because people was all manual. People would turn it on and leave it on.
Forget.
So now that's all going to be digitally controlled and programmed, so it's only going to run when you need it, and that will be a huge energy saver.
It was because the kitchen, the air handling for the kitchen always used 100% outside air because of the smoke and things like that. So exactly, people would leave the hood on, and that was just constant. So now with the digital controls, you can go in there by timers, by motion sensors, make sure that that's shut off, and then, it's going to be a great
energy. And has Focus on Energy come back to you guys with any kind of estimate on what they're rebating you on?
Yes.
On the units, on the air handlers, we've got that firmed up, but because they're going through, they just changed contracts in March 1st, I think, is when they changed, or April 1st, they changed contracts from their old provider that they contracted with to provide their engineering services to a new firm. Everything's in kind of a state of flux. So we've got 2 projects, that one and one that we're looking at for the detention center right now, that's their computations aren't coming as quick as they normally would.
So and when they give you those rebates, do those go back into your operating budget? Or do they go to pay down any kind of longer-term debt? Or how do you guys handle those rebates?
The rebates basically will just reduce the cost of the project up front. Okay. So whatever we don't spend for the project just lapses back into the fund.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Plumbing.
Sorry.
All right, let's move on.
Poor guy.
Let's move on here and get the plumbing here. I've got a phone call in 15 minutes. I never thought I'd be here until 9:30 tonight. So let's go.
Pretty much we're having trouble with the getting warm water to the showers at the detention center. We've looked at a couple of things. We tried creating three loops that had a little bit of success, but it didn't get us where we needed to be. So the final step is going to be to go through the building and replace all of the shower valves and the sink valves. Pretty much the codes have changed. Nowadays they require some check valves and some positive shutoffs on showers and sinks, and that wasn't the case when we built the building. So it's allowing water to backfeed, and we really can't get a good flow of warm water through the building.
So again, there are problems that existed from the
Right. Yeah. Anything with regards to, sorry, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Larger water heaters, anything like that, or you know, they've got those recirculator pumps, nothing like that?
We just added.
Right. 3 years ago, we revamped the whole hot water system there to make it more efficient and get more capacity. So we have a laundry and a full-service kitchen there.
Okay.
And that has a separate loop, and we have a 1,600-gallon storage tank.
I still don't think we found a smoking gun yet. We're going to keep drilling into it till we find out.
It's somewhere in that building. Yeah,
there's something going on.
Anything else, Ron?
No. That's
okay. Move on. Parking structure.
Parking structure, just an update. Again, for the new members, that parking structure that exists down in the Civic Center campus, everybody's probably pretty familiar with. There are a number of things that weren't tied up yet on that building when it opened, too. And there's control gates. There's supposed to be control gates on that. The lighting does not work efficiently or correctly in that building. And the security system is not functioning as well. So those three things, because that was a grant-funded project, we've had to work with the state and the state's consultant for this project to get these last few loose ends tied up. And it's literally been like a two-year project. We're to the point now where specs has been finalized with us and the engineer. The engineering group is Mead and Hunt. We finalized those on Friday, just passed. We have to now get those put into our county format, and then we have to submit that whole package of bid specifications for those three items up to the state. They review them. Hopefully they will bless them so that we can advertise that stuff during the month of June. And we're still hoping to have a construction date to actually put the gates in. We'll be bringing a recommendation back to this committee, which will probably be fairly controversial, but it will be the pricing policy for
right.
those gates
right.
For controlling a structure that hasn't been anything in place. People just drive in there and park for free. So we'll be bringing that back probably, I won't say the beginning of June, probably will be the July meeting that we'll have that. Because actually that's part of Mead and Hunt's task was to do a survey of surrounding communities to get some idea of pricing structure and stuff for that. So bottom line is by next meeting we should have our bids, our specs will hopefully be out for bid, and we should be able to at least start to broach the discussion on the pricing for that
structure. We've been working on this for a couple of years, and so this is just a report.
Yep.
And so if you heard the information, we're kind of held hostage here because it was a state paid project.
Yeah.
And they were just very slow on these things. So all it is what Ray just said. The gates, the pay structure, and that's it. It's just a report.
Yeah.
No action by this committee tonight.
What was the address? Or roughly?
That'll be the corner of 54th and 10th Avenue. 54th Street and 10th Avenue.
Sheridan Road,
yeah.
Right.
Anyway,
yep.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ray. New business facilities.
It's the last one.
Yes, I passed around an example. These are the lights, the ground lighting, and also the column lighting we want to use for the courthouse restoration lighting. And it turns out that Rude Beta, which is their LED division, will sell us these LED lights, low profile, very energy efficient, very low maintenance, at distributor cost, which is a significant savings. It turns out that they only will sell it directly to a government agency, Kenosha Racine. They will not sell it to a contractor. So therefore, to take advantage of this pricing, we have to buy it direct. Therefore, we've compared it with other models. This is kind of a new technology. The next closest thing, we're basically getting the lights for $550 a piece. The next closest one, it may be a little better light, but it's almost $900 from another company. So to take advantage of this pricing, we have to do a sole source resolution. And that's what you have before you today.
What's the total?
The total cost for all of the lights? The total cost for all the lights, we've got the lights for the entire front south facade and the east facade will come out to $23,650. But we have an option in our bid to also light the west side. So it would be the same as the east and west, which right now they didn't do. That would actually add another $4,400, and that's what puts us over the $25,000 threshold. So because we don't actually need a sole source resolution if it's under 25, but because we are considering that, if we've got the money to do it, the lighting engineer says it really should be symmetrical. So that's why we brought it before you.
And you're saying that there's no one else can do it besides these people?
There is one other company, and they've kind of had a lock on the market for this, but they have higher prices. Like I said, about $900 a piece. Beta has just entered this market. They want to get into this, and they've come in with some good pricing, but we get even better pricing, distributor direct pricing, only for government agencies in Kenosha and Racine. This was a Al Rood personally instituted this program.
Right. I was going to add, we did a similar thing on the public safety building with Rood Lighting, all the new lights on the external. That we didn't have to sole source because it wasn't, it was a small quantity of lights. It was about $8,000 worth of lights. But basically all the LEDs on the safety building, parking lot, bollards, and wall packs are all Beta. And the pricing that we got then was the same pricing. And relative to what was in the budget for those lights, where they were just high-efficiency fluorescents, these were actually less at the pricing structure. The thing that makes these unique is really the design. These are they're extremely low profile. They had them out. We had a demo about, it was one of the nights that the county board met. I think it was maybe the last county board meeting. We had a demo. We had them rig up just so we could see how the actual light looked on the building. And the concept is these are very low profile, very discreet, so they don't detract. They're not the big clunky lights that we had out in the lawn. These things are going to be up close to the building, and the way they're designed, they can function close to the building and still light things properly. So yeah, as Frank said, they worked with a lighting engineer. There's two lights that are really designed with this kind of a concept. And I mean, there's many LED lights out there, but there's two that are designed with this real low profile, and the others are considerably more money. That's why these are the ones that are being recommended right now.
Any questions?
Yeah, cool.
Discussion?
Is Beta, because Cree owns Rood,
right.
So is Beta the electrical contractor?
Actually, Cree bought Rood.
Yep.
Under Rood, Rood created a division specifically for LED.
Gotcha.
Called
okay.
Beta.
Okay.
So that's
good. And the other question is with the 23 or if you do the west side, it sounds like that's still for debate. Was that the original estimate with regards to all the work on this?
The original project budget for landscape and lighting was like $125,000 or something like that. I believe was the total. And this with the landscape, especially now that we're going to get the right landscaping prices,
our chairman just
we should be well under budget.
It ain't going to work, but it's still going to be under budget.
We'll still bring it up for discussion. Okay, thank you.
So, does anybody have a motion on this then?
To approve it.
Moved by Supervisor Nudo to approve the resolution for sole sourcing courthouse external lighting. Any further discussion?
You guys need a second?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'll second.
Move and second it. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Dustin? Okay. Well, you're more conservative than that, Dustin.
My last vote.
Oh.
This is less than flying.
Yeah. Any other matters?
Oh, you're right.
That is your last
motion. I think we covered quite a bit, Mr.
Yeah, we'll let Dustin.
I can't make that motion, but.
You can make the motion to adjourn.
We'll let you.
We'll let you.
I'll move to adjourn.
Okay. Yeah. Second and
third.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned. Thank you all. We'll take a look into all these things and we'll get back to ourselves, right?
Yes.
Yeah. No, no.